I'm 40 seconds late, running behind tonight. Sorry about that. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Council President Boobin Vanderhaar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. And if you will join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item is the consent agenda. Discussion, anything you want to move, a motion?
Move we approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Thank you. Next, we have community reports. Update on changes for CUNA cleanup. Chad Gordon, Jan M. Sanitation. Chad, welcome.
Thank you, guys. Mayor, council member, for the record, Chad Gordon, 688 Swan Falls Road, Representative Jan M. Sanitation. Tonight, I was just going to present to you guys some changes that we're proposing for the CUNA cleanup this year. Due to some of the growth that we've had, it's gotten to the point where we kind of got to start thinking about some of the things that get it all accomplished in a little bit longer period of time than just one day. So I've got some packets that I'll hand out to you guys real quick. It's going to outline what we're talking about, and then it has a map on the second page.
Sweet. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any pictures?
Any pictures?
Yeah.
I have them on the back page.
Colored ones, too.
Yeah, color-coded.
All right.
So as most of you know, we hold our annual CUNA cleanup generally in April or May, depending upon the timing of getting everybody lined up to do so. In the past, we have done it all in one day. We've done our curbside pickup, and we've also done our drop site. The last couple years, we've seen, obviously, the town grow tremendously. Trying to cover that much area in a short period of time of one day with the volunteers, which seem to be getting less and less, is becoming more difficult. With that said, we've proposed a few changes in order to still provide the same level of service to our customers and citizens as we have in the past, but be able to do it probably a little more efficiently than we have the last couple years. The other issues that we've ran into is we've had seemingly a lot more people coming in from out of town that are not J&M customers and are not citizens of the CUNA. They are bringing in copious amounts of material and filling our boxes up, at times even just kicking it out on the curbside in front of somebody's house. So with that said, we proposed a few changes. One of the changes that we want to try to make is to do our curbside event over a two-week period and doing it on the customer service day. And so it's pretty basically taking, if you look at the second map, taking the city and splitting it up into two different sections. This is based upon the same map that we do our curbside recycling on. So it should be hopefully fairly easy for people to kind of understand. But the first week doing the one section, so say your regular trash day is Monday, that's the day that you're going to be allowed to stick your extras out. We'll send a separate truck by. I'll be able to man it with my own employees, not having to worry about volunteer staff. They're going to better be able to look at what's at the curb and determine if it's something that we really should be taking anyhow, because we're getting a lot of customers putting hazardous waste out there instead of bringing it to the drop site. Items like piles of concrete, wood, all kinds of interesting things. This will give us the opportunity to be able to have a conversation directly with the customer that, hey, these items need to be brought down to our drop site on the drop day, or we just can't handle these items, period. You got to, you know, this is a demolition of a house. We're not, that's not what this is meant for. This is meant for cleaning out the garage. So we would do that over a two-week period, and then at the end of that two-week period, it would culminate in our actual drop site. We would do the same setup that we've done in years past. We'll have all the roll-off boxes down there for trash. We'll have the trailers for tires. The haz waste unit will be set up to take all the same haz waste items. We pretty basically will not be eliminating any items that we would normally take other than the items that have become a problem for us that we would really wouldn't accept in the beginning. With that said, we are also wanting to go ahead and do kind of a limitation per household on that drop site day of two loads. We're proposing putting a QR code onto the city billing that the customer will have to bring with them. We'll have some way of scanning it at the gate to keep track of how many loads they brought in. Again, this was another issue we ran into where we've seen people bringing in 10, 15, 20 loads. And it's really not fair to some of the other folks that are doing it right, and they might come in towards the end of the day and we're out of space, because the last couple of years we've done about 25 boxes at the drop site alone.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's, you know, we want to kind of continue to keep that space available for people that are citizens to do some normal household cleanup, garage, yard work sort of stuff. Not, I tore down my shed in the backyard, I'm going to haul it down here, and I got three rentals, and I'm going to bring all that stuff, so on and so forth. So with that said, we wanted to kind of present it to you guys, see if you guys had any questions, concerns, suggestions, anything else that might help this to go a little bit smoother. This first year, I have a feeling, is going to be a little bit of a, we might have some rough patches. One, getting the information out to the customers always seems to be a problem, trying to get it spread as much as we can through social media, through the city billing. I've already had questions arise. I kind of put it out there as a feeler on Facebook to see what people thought. There's been some concerns about, I'm a renter, I don't get the bill. So we're going to try to put something in the wording that we send out telling landlords, hey, please make a copy of this available to your tenants, or even maybe possibly figuring something out where the tenant can come in and get a copy of the bill or something like that, just so that people aren't left out of that. We want, you know, even if they are a tenant, we still want to be able to provide them that same service. So we're going to try to work some of those things out. The first year, we might just say we're taking it with the QR code and checking to see if they have the city bill, but not necessarily really being sticklers on that and allowing people to kind of come in, getting the word out to them, saying, hey, look, you know, this is changing. Be prepared for next year. We're going to have these same changes. So.
And the QR code was more to protect against people bringing more than two loads than actually checking for residency?
Or things that I could see would be, you know, somebody lives here in Kuna, they have a water bill, and they call their uncle that lives in Meridian and says, here, I'm going to fax you a copy of this bill. Just bring it with you, and you'll get in. Whereas if we had that QR code associated with their city billing account number, we should be able to, and this is the part that we're trying to work out still, is on our scanners, whether it's our tablets or phones, whatever, have an Excel list or something that tracks and says, okay, twice this number has come up, they're not allowed anymore. Whether or not it works out that way this first year, that's still to be determined. But that's the hope, is that we can get to that point so that we can kind of limit it. You know, and I mean, if somebody has an exception or, you know, they say, hey, I got just one more load, I'm not going to be a complete stickler. But the ones that we're getting that are abusing the system are the ones that I'm really trying to eliminate that so that we could continue to do this for the citizens of the city.
If we're talking about like a bill insert, one other suggestion I might have would be to add maybe a little reminder that you can always rent a
dumpster,
yeah, and that you guys drop it off and it's really easy and so on and so forth.
Cost.
Yeah, just so that people know that, like, hey, there's another easy option if, you know, if you have more than what's anticipated.
And I think we'll probably put, you know, maybe do a follow-up even after the event of something that would discuss that. Because already as it is, I think I'm at like 4 pages of inserts to go out with this to let people know. And we're shooting for April 20th would be the drop site. So it would be the 2 weeks prior to that for the pickup curbside and then culminating at the drop site on that Saturday, April 20th. And then I think we would probably send something out after that saying, look, here, we have these options if, you know, you weren't able to get to the cleanup or whatever of a dumpster or the transfer station is in Meridian. Just, you know, that seems to be one of the more common questions that we get call-wise is, where's the nearest dump? And a lot of people don't know that there's a transfer station in Meridian that is available to them for a fee. But, we had last year, I had some of the volunteers take a picture of the carloads of stuff coming in and off the freeway and following them all the way back here, you know, to town, and then they just pull up in front of somebody's house and kick it off on the curb, and it's like, okay, that's not what this is. And again, you know, as the city grows, it's just gotten tougher manpower-wise and vehicle-wise to cover. And we've had some great volunteers for the last as many years as I can count that have really made that available. But it just seems like every year it's getting a little harder and harder to find volunteers. And also trying to train them up in a short period of time as to what we really are accepting curbside, and then making sure that everybody covers the entire route and that one day, whereas if my own drivers that know all these routes are covering it, they're just going to follow behind the regular pickup, and they're going to get everything. Nothing's going to get missed. They'll be able to tag it accordingly if it's something that we don't take, and then get that correspondence one-on-one back with the customer as to why we weren't able to take that curbside. So.
Do we have thoughts at all about how we could approach the rental thing? I know that we approved, like, forever ago, and maybe this is a good time or later in the meeting for a status update on the ability to have. Remember, we approved the thing where renters could log in and pay the utility bills, that we were going to approve that double login thing, and that never got rolled out. So, do you have any thoughts on how we could address the issue? People were specifically saying on Facebook that they can't come into the city and get a copy of their water bill, even if they're a renter, because their name's not on the account, and there's no way for them to legally, you know, obtain that from us. They don't have any proof of, you know what I mean?
Right. What it might be a consideration to have some, I don't know, QR code vouchers that we can distribute to renters if they come in, or if it can be done electronically, and that we could email them or something like that.
I mean, if as long as it's an insert, like, I think landlords right. could just email the bill to the tenant. That's what I do every month, but yeah, I just don't, I don't want to make it overly burdensome.
And as long as I think we just had some sort of QR code, it doesn't matter if it's actually on the city bill or it's on a separate sheet. You know, that's kind of what I've been working with, trying to figure out whether or not we could put it on the bill, or we should just do a whole other separate sheet that has the QR code on there. I think there should be some way to disseminate that to the tenants in some way, shape, or form. It's just going to be a matter, again, trying to get the word out to people is always the toughest.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think even some of the landlords may not read the inserts that come with the billing. So they're not going to know to pass that on to their tenant. Again, this first year, we're not going to be complete sticklers on it. You know, we're probably going to let quite a few people in that maybe don't have even the bill with them, because we don't want people to get such a bad taste in their mouth right off the bat on this change, but we do want them to start to prepare for the fact that this in the coming years, this is going to be the way.
Have you talked to Jared or any of his staff about for the utility billing or?
I have called, what is her name at BDS?
Greta?
No, well, Greta.
Randy.
At BDS.
Oh.
Pat. Yes, I have talked to Pat at BDS, and she has said that they do have space on the bill to put the QR code. The biggest thing I'm coming up with right now is creating the QR code associated with the actual account number and trying to find somebody who knows how to do that. And then keep it in an Excel file that I can have downloaded to some sort of scanner. So that's what I've been currently working on. I'm hoping to have something here by the end of the month that I know it can be done. It's just a matter of finding the right person to be able to do it.
Okay. Yeah, so let's just kind of keep Jared in the loop so that
okay.
they know what's going on, and they might even have some good idea doing it.
Absolutely.
They've been doing
I'll
that for a long time.
At this point, so.
Good. Well, we appreciate all the work that you do on this every year, and I know it's just grown
tremendously,
hugely over the last few years. And
but it's a great event. I think it's, you know, it's something that is, you don't see any other communities doing it, and we want to keep doing it and keep providing that service to the customers, because it benefits everybody in the long run. But we do want to make sure that it is for the citizens of CUDA and for customers.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chad.
Good.
Thanks. Yeah,
thank you,
Chad.
Thanks. Next, we have a public hearing in consideration to approve 18-06AN annexation and 18-08-S preliminary plat on behalf of Trilogy Development. James Huggs, are you going to be the one presenting? Jace, you going to? Okay. And then was there anybody who wanted to testify on that didn't get a chance to sign in? Did you want to sign in? Beer and wine permit. I don't think that's the one you want. Well, maybe.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, for the record, Jace Hellman, CUNA Planning and Zoning Staff, 751 West 4th Street. As stated previously, the application before you this evening is for the annexation and preliminary plat approval. Applicant requests to annex two contiguous parcels comprising of approximately 60.85 acres on East Hubbard Road and North Locust Grove Road into CUNA city limits with an R8 zoning designation, and to subdivide the 60.85 acres into 298 total lots, which consists of 253 single-family lots and 45 common lots. And the project is proposed to be completed in five phases. The future land use map identifies this parcel as medium-density residential. If the applicant's requested zoning designation of R8 is approved, this project would be compliant with the City of CUNA's future land use map. Additionally, staff has found that this project is in technical compliance with CUNA City Code and meets a number of goals and policies within the comprehensive plan as noted within the staff report in your packets. All notice and requirements have been completed in order to hold this public hearing this evening. A legal notice was run in the CUNA Melbourne News and placed on the website on February 13th. A mailer was sent out to residents within 400 feet of the project site on February 13th as well, and then a site was posted with a sign by the applicant on February 21st advertising for this evening's hearing. And with that, I'll stand for any questions you guys may have.
Okay, questions for Jace? Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Jane Suggs. I work at WH Pacific, 2141 Airport Way, and I'm here representing Trilogy Development and the Ledgestone Subdivision. I think if you looked in through your staff report, you know where this is located. Maybe someone could put up the vicinity map for me just to kind of remind everybody. We are on Hubbard Road. We're across the street from Patagonia. I think somewhere there's a no vicinity map. Well, we'll just go back to that map. How's that? Hubbard Road and the far east access there is on Locust Grove Road. I can always count on Jace to give a really update of the why we are doing what we're doing, and we're meeting the comprehensive plan and meeting the zoning code. Let me start off by telling you we agree with all the conditions of approval that are in the staff report along with the findings of fact. Just a few highlights. This property is just over 60 acres, 253 buildable lots. The density of that project is 4.16, so keep that in mind. We're just over 4 units to an acre. Though we are requesting an annexation of R8, which typically is higher density, this zone does meet your current comprehensive plan for medium density, a designation in your comprehensive plan, and matches the zoning designations in the proposed comprehensive plan as well. We looked at the existing and the proposed. However, the thing to point out here is this is not an open-ended zoning annexation request. I think you've seen a few of those where people come in and want to annex with a certain density, but they don't show you. We're showing you exactly how this project will be developed. So our annexation is tied to this plat as submitted. As I mentioned, the actual density is very close to the R4 zone, which is 4.16 dwelling units to an acre. We are actually excited to show you something on this plat, and you can see it on the eastern portion of the site. We are introducing an alley-loaded product to CUNA with this particular project. 53 homes will actually face a public street, but the garages are accessed from an alley. So you'll see those as the skinny little lots that are located kind of just beyond the park and a little bit further east on the plan. That kind of design allows that the lots are 40 feet wide instead of the typical garage front width. When you have a garage, you generally have something that's 50 to 60 feet wide, but a lot of that is taken up by garages. The lots are typically just over, 4,400 square feet in size, and I have, and this is why we go with this particular zoning designation of R8. Because R8 is the only designation that allows lots at 4,400 square feet. This actual design promotes a very nice streetscape, and it doesn't hide the front doors behind a garage. And we've actually got a few renderings to show you of what the streetscape might look like. So if you'll flip through, you'll see that's what the streets will look like when you don't have a garage up front. You have these nice front facades of the homes. You have porches. You actually kind of creates a little sense of community just on those blocks that have these alley-loaded homes. And there's a nice example. Some of them are large. Some of them can be quite small. One of the things to remember with these is there's very little, and that's the standard home. That's an example of a standard home, but the renderings there are of our alley load. There's very little yard maintenance with these alley-loaded homes, and we find these homes are very popular with millennials and seniors. We are providing on the back, next to the alleyway, a 20-foot apron in front of the two-car garage. So each one of these will have a two-car garage with a 20-foot apron in front of that garage, and then alley-loaded. So you don't lose anything. In fact, you gain parking because along this street, you'll be able to park along the whole length of the street. You won't be dodging driveways along the front. There will be no parking in the alley itself. The alley is 20 feet wide, and then again, 20-foot aprons, and then a garage in each one of those homes. These alley load homes make up 21% of the homes in the project. The majority of the homes will still be on standard lots, and those lot sizes range from 5,476 square feet to over 10,000 square feet. The average lot size of the standard home lot, not including these alley loads, standard lot sizes, the average size is 6,822 square feet, so over 6,800 feet for those standard lots. We feature, if we'll go back to the landscape plan, please. We feature in our project quite a bit of open space and landscaping. 8.5 acres, or 14% of the site, is open space. If you take out the buffers that you see around the property and some of the end caps, we actually have over 10% open space that we classify as usable open space. One of the most prominent features you'll see along the north boundary, which is Mason Creek, we are prepared to construct about 2,000 feet of regional pathway that's part of the CUNA's Recreation and Pathways Master Plan. And once we complete that work, the developer will build that and dedicate it to the city. So that completes part of that pathway system that you also see up in Patagonia, which is north of us. Of course, the developer will extend utilities to and through the site. We've actually sent our traffic impact study, which we had to do because of the number of lots. We sent that to ACHD and ITD, and the developer agrees with all the recommendations they've made. We can talk about those if you have questions about those. There are also a couple of letters from neighbors in your packet, from Mr. Browning and from the Garretts, and I can go over details, respond to those if you'd like me to. Point by point if you'd like, but we are doing landscaping just similar to Patagonia across the street, which was one of the concerns, and we are constructing the pathway along Mason Creek to meet the CUNA code for the regional pathway. I just want to reiterate that we are developing at the low end of the comprehensive plan medium density designation, so we've looked at the comprehensive plan, both existing and proposed, and we're actually developing at the low end of that. We are providing a mix of housing and home products, and we have substantial open space, including that pathway. Let me also add, in the landscaped areas that you'll see throughout the property, we do have a centrally located park that will have a tot lot, gazebo, and a half basketball court. That's very popular these days, along with some open areas for play. In addition, there are 5 other common lots that will be landscaped and kind of perfect for passive recreation and neighborhood meetups, and we've added some pathways throughout between the lots to get everybody over to that Mason Creek pathway, which we think is very popular. We're pretty excited to bring you a new subdivision that has a range of lot sizes, is a major addition to the city's pathway plan, and also introduces a new alley load product into the community. And we think that this mix of lot sizes and houses that come with that and with the alley load, these are the factors that actually create a mix of generations and lifestyles and creates true community. We were unanimously approved by Planning and Zoning Commission, and I very respectfully request your approval of Ledgestone Subdivision tonight. I can stand for questions.
Okay. Questions for Okay, thank you. This is a public hearing, so we have one signed up to testify, Kenneth Jantz. If you would, just state your name and address for the record, please.
I'm Kenneth Jantz. I live at 8440 South Locust Grove. I'm approximately 1 mile north of this particular subdivision. I would like to point out, and I'm sure you people all know this, that on the corner of Locust Grove and Columbia Road, Meridian has decided to put in a processing facility, basically a dump, and I think all of the developers are in favor of that because they can haul all their junk there and have it processed. I happen to live just south and east of that property across the street, and there's a neighborhood group that is fighting this issue with the city of Meridian. I've talked to you about it, Mayor, and we've gotten no help from CUNA. It's going to affect all the CUNA residences that are in that area, and I suspect that we have talked to people in Patagonia. They're aware of it, and I know they've lost some house sales because of it. That's one of the reasons I think you ought to look at this real close. Help us out in the CUNA area, because one day we'll probably be citizens in your jurisdiction. The other thing that bothers me is the highway, South Locust Grove Road, that runs by our house. We're loading this up between Johnson's project and this project, and I think there's another one planned. We're talking about 1,000 homes. And unless they do a serious job on South Locust Grove, the going up the hill to the north of this property is a real traffic problem. Problem meaning that people come off that stop sign, go down that road and off the hill at 70, 80 miles an hour, and we who live on that or off of it, it's dangerous to get on and off. It can be fixed. And I think that you should make a real effort with the highway department to do something about that section of road.
Okay.
As far as this particular development, I'm neutral on it. But I say that area is going to be overloaded with houses, and you're not ready for it. The other thing is Hubbard Road, Patagonia, and the little which will tie into you, that road was rebuilt, and it's a disaster. And if that's the kind of product we're going to get from ACHD, we ought to run them out of the county. It's bumpy. It's got holes in it. It's dangerous. Somebody take a look at it. That's my comments.
Okay. I could be wrong, but I think they did the temporary patch job because it was getting close to the winter time. I'm hopeful that they're going to fix that, because you're right, that is a bumpy mess. So, did anybody have any other questions for Mr. Jantz?
Nope.
Thank you.
I don't. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's all I had signed up. Was there anybody who wanted to sign up and didn't get a chance to? Okay, thank you. Rebuttal?
Thank you, Mayor, Council members. Again, Jane Suggs. I appreciate the neighbors coming out and speaking, especially when there are concerns about traffic. We did do a traffic study and sent that to ACHD. What I have here in the traffic and the response from ACHD is that the average daily traffic for Locust Grove north of Hubbard Road, so this is going up to Columbia, was 1,000 cars that was in August 8th of 2018, so a pretty recent traffic count, 1,000 cars. But as an arterial, is a pretty low amount of traffic. I think even a local street can carry up to 2,000 cars a day. So they call it a better than E level of service. There are a few things that they've suggested that we do, and I know there are other projects coming. So at Locust Grove in Columbia, eventually, and not because of this particular project, with all the projects coming, ACHD is looking at a potential roundabout at Locust Grove and Columbia. So that's something you'll probably see as that area develops more. And the Locust Grove and Hubbard intersection might be considered, need to be a four-way stop when this particular site is developed up to 224 lots of the 258 that we're planning. So there is a requirement for us to look at putting in a four-way stop at Hubbard and Locust Grove to mitigate some of the issues with traffic. There is also a request by ACHD that as we come south on Hubbard Road and turn into our easternmost drive, you'll see it on the eastern side, that we might need a right turn lane, sort of a deceleration lane. But there's a bridge there. They said they would work with us because that lane might not be a long lane. It might be a stacking area for a couple of cars. They would not require us to actually rebuild a bridge for just the decel lane. So those came in the staff report. We agree with those as well. ITD, just I'm trying to remember this, they came up with an idea that up on Highway 69 going north that Patagonia and this project might require a right turn lane on Highway 69 turning right onto Hubbard as you're northbound. The developer of this property agreed with ITD that he would work with other developers to make sure that that got built in a timely manner depending on the number of lots that come first. So it could be that Greg Johnson builds it as part of Patagonia, and it could be that Trilogy builds it as part of Ledgestone. But there is an agreement in place that they would work together to make that happen if there needs to. And it was surprising to me because that did not seem to be like a high priority turning movement, but they said there were eight cars during the peak hour in the PM that wanted to make that turn, and they needed to have a turn lane there. But it's on a state highway, so it's hard for developers to actually build on the state highway, so it could be that there's eventually some money that goes into some fund. I don't know exactly how. ITD doesn't really have impact fees, and I know they're working to that because we now send all of our traffic studies to ITD too for comment. Do you have any other questions? Can I respond to any questions?
Nope.
Again, thank you very much. Just we were very excited that P&Z was unanimous in their approval, and we think this is a great project for CUNA. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That's all the testimony we have on that, so I don't know how much council's going to want to get into this, if we're going to close the public hearing yet, or if you want to ask any more questions as you deliberate, we'll leave that open.
Did you have anything, Rich?
I would like to... Where'd she go? Oh. is block 3 and block 4 where the garages are behind them?
Let me get this out to make sure I know which one we're talking about.
Because I don't see alleyways.
You'll see them blocks, let's see, is that 5 and 9? So can I come and just show you on the screen?
Sure.
Right up here. That's an alley right there between these two. So those are alley loaded lots. And then these two blocks right here have alleys. So this little skinny thing is an alley. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Sorry.
Could I ask why, if you look at the eastern part of the plat here, all the lots are rather small. Why didn't you disperse them with the lots to the west so you'd have more unity? What you've got now is all the small lots are to the east, all the big lots are to the west.
Right, and the smaller lots are the alley-loaded lots. So
right.
They're only 40 feet wide, and that's why we put those there all together so that we can serve them with an alley.
Okay.
And that's makes, so that's why those... several blocks are all alley loaded. And you're right, there's a kind of, there's a mix, a little bit of mix. You might, I didn't make a slide of this, but I colored up a map showing the R4 lots, the R6 lots, and the R8 lots. And I'm going to pass that around and kind of give you a little bit of an idea.
Oh, I see, yeah, that's nice. Okay.
I mean, that's just something I did for my purposes to show, and we even have some 10,000-foot lots that are much larger than the standard R4 lot, just to show we do have a little bit of a mix, but when you have the alleys, you kind of put all the alley-loaded lots together so that they can be serviced that way.
Okay.
Anybody else want to look at that? And then we'll need to pass that off to the clerk when we're done.
That really wasn't part of my testimony because it was just something I did for myself.
Yeah.
But I think it got to your question about
yes,
mix and a little bit of a mix between the 6 and the 4 and the 8 lots. So.
Also on my plat here, it shows, looks like a railroad track going along here up.
Those are phase lines.
Those are what?
Phase lines. Those will show how the project will be built. It will start.
Oh, okay.
We'll build half of Strobel Road, so that Strobel Road doesn't really exist. It's a half-mile collector. So we'll build a portion of that, and that will be our main entrance. So we'll build that, and that's where the property, where the development starts, because that's where the sewer is.
Okay.
And then we'll move to the east. So those little railroad lines are phase lines.
So the lots with garages will be the last phase?
Towards the last phase, it'll be, and those are the rear-loaded garages, yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Anybody else?
No.
Thoughts?
Are we good with closing the public hearing?
Yes.
Any more questions, Rich?
Any more questions for staff or audience or?
Okay.
Let me ask Bobby. So on the green space, open space, and the trailways and all of that, is that does that look like what you would like to see there?
Yes, seeing this for the first time, it actually looks pretty good. So
you hadn't seen this before?
Mm-mm, not yet. This is the first time I've seen it, so. But it does look good.
Well, that makes me uncomfortable if we're going to have a city-owned trail system that you haven't seen yet.
So, yeah. But, yeah, it looks adequate.
The next thing he'll want is a 4x4 to get there and get back.
If I may, Mayor.
Yeah.
Can I say that we are building according to the requirements of that pathway master plan. I believe it's a 30-foot lot with a 10-foot pathway in it. So, I mean, we're building it so that it will be something we can take over, that the city could take over for maintenance.
Okay, well, we're going to have to do something different there because, I mean, we've got one department that's going to have to take over and maintain this stuff, and if they don't even know it and haven't even seen it yet, then I don't think that's a good idea. So. I don't know how we got a disconnect with that, but that certainly needs to change. So I think if it were my, if I have my preference, I'd really like to let Bobby have a little more time to take a look at this and see what he would have for suggestions and. And then I would assume we're not using any park impact fee monies to build this trailways?
The developer's building it, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want more? Do you want time to look at it, Bobby?
No, looking at it, it goes with our comp plan and everything. The pathway is going to be 10 foot, which is what I like. So I think we're good to go on that.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Anything further? Did anybody else want to talk to staff about anything else, or are we ready to?
Mayor, I have one more question.
Okay.
Am I reading the minutes with planning and zoning, and I'll read it. Approximately 14% or 8.51 acres of the project has been dedicated to common area, and 10.2 or 6.2 acres have been determined as usable open space. That's a total of 24%. Is that correct?
No, you've added those up. So 14% of the site is common open space. Of that, 10% is what we call usable open space. Some of that open space, the buffers, for example, are beautiful and they add a lot, but people aren't going to be spending time in the buffers. So, but we count that because that's land that we don't get to develop. It's part of the common space. So it's just 10% of that 14.
10%
well,
of the
14. Not 10% of the 14, yeah. But 10%. Okay, I'm really
10% of the total land mass.
Thank you, my math. What can I say? So yeah, it's there. Don't add those together. So.
Okay, looking at the plat, I couldn't imagine that was a total of 24.2 acres. Okay.
But having over 10% usable open space is pretty big, and a lot of that is in our parks, our pathways, and that larger regional pathway.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Final call. Does anybody have any more questions or anything?
No.
Okay.
Can I have a minute?
Yes.
I'm checking my notes.
Go for it. Take as long as you need.
You can even have like a minute and a half.
I'll give you three.
Thumb into his computer over there.
No. Well, Rich is looking. Council, can I just ask one question? Is a motion to close evidence presentation, does that not constitute closing the public hearing? Are separate motions required for that?
Mr. Mayor, with your permission.
Yes.
Councilman Vandervaar. I got to learn how to pronounce it.
We know who you're talking
the name like Gigre, I understand. In my view, it's better to just close the receipt of evidence and testimony and proceed to deliberation because it is, in my view, still part of the public hearing as your deliberation to decision, much like, you know, it's a segment of the meeting dedicated to this one particular application. That's my preference. I don't know if we were up on judicial review whether the Supreme Court would strike this, but what the court will want to determine is when did the proceedings start and when did they end, because that becomes the transcript of the proceeding that's on judicial review, the record of the proceeding that becomes the evidence that's reviewed by the court. And I think if you continue the hearing until you complete deliberation, it's easier to make that call if something ends up in the district court as to when this proceeding ended.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Rich, did you find anything else?
Well, On page 62 of 242, kind of caught my eye last night. In the disbursement of vehicles, they have State Highway 69 going north out of 2,298 daily trips at full build out. Only 20% is going up the highway north. State Highway 69 going south is 5%. Locust Grove North, which really surprised me, is 40%. Locust Grove South is 5%. And Hubbard Road going east to Eagle Road is 30. If you look at that and you look at a two-lane road at build out, that's kind of scary that we're going to have that kind of traffic going north on Locust Grove and going east over to Eagle Road. I wish Ada County could keep up with the growth around here. My concern is all this traffic going on two-lane roads on the back roads in order to get it to our north and south distribution. I get a little concerned, and they're talking about 2025, which is only 5 years away. It just bothers me that we're allowing all these subdivisions in when the roads are not being kept to that standard. Anyway, I found that interesting. I don't know if anybody else looked at that in any kind of depth.
Well, I think Mr. Dentz had a good point there and a valid concern with the roads and their ability to take a lot of more traffic. I guess as you all know that Ada County Highway District makes those changes as they receive the impact fees, and then that's kind of where that funding comes from. Otherwise, taxpayers have to pay for all that ahead of time, and unfortunately, that's the nature of the beast, is why we're always behind with roadways, but you've got to have the money to pay for it. So, although I completely agree.
Yeah. Well, I just found it interesting that Locust Grove going north is actually double the traffic that State Highway 69 going north, which just amazes me. I would think everybody would go over to the highway in order to do, well, normally 55, but 70 is probably common up and down that highway, but they'll probably do 70 down Locust Grove now, so it doesn't matter, I assume.
My recollection from prior testimony, and I'm looking at you because you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that when they do the traffic studies, they look at the current road use and then extrapolate out. So my assumption then is that right now, for the people living in that area, 40% choose to go up Locust Grove instead of going to Meridian or going over to Eagle, that sort of thing. So I mean, you can only base it on, you know, what the established parameters are for how to conduct a traffic study, but I wouldn't be surprised if subdivision people chose more to go to faster arterials than convenient ones, but who knows.
Okay.
I believe you are correct on that.
I usually am.
No, you usually are, yes. All right, anything?
Other than I wish the lots were more dispersed, but so be it, I guess.
Okay.
All right, I move we close as evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I hear what you're saying, Rich, about the lot sizes and spread and stuff like that, but I do think that this is one of the of the subdivisions we've seen lately, this one certainly has larger lots than most. I appreciate the totally new housing style too. It gives a new option for folks. So I'm curious to see if that is a popular thing or, you know, anyway, something different for people, which is one of the goals of the comp plan.
You know, it's funny, Brianna, because, and I can't think of his name, over off of 10 Mile, put in those houses with the garages in back. Ernie Lombard, I believe, was the architect and the developer over there. And phase one was the, and this has no bearing on you, but phase one had all the garages behind, and they sold so slowly that phase two on, they put all the garages back up in front, which is interesting because it's been tried before here in the city, and it was very slowly accepted. Speaking of alleyways, I don't think you have any lighting down the alleyways, do you, proposed?
We already closed evidence presentation. Yeah, we have to reopen
it. I don't think there was any lighting down the alleyways. I just wonder if that would bring vandalism to a heightened stage.
I think we have
lighting requirements in city code, and yeah, they're complying with all city code.
They will. Okay.
I do remember specifically seeing a condition of approval that mentioned lighting and dark sky standards and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, getting back to the garages before it was tried by Ernie Lombard over there off of 10 Mile and Kenna Road, and it was very slowly accepted, so he went back to the garages in the front on phase two on. But that's to be seen. Personally, I like the idea of a garage behind the house, personally.
Yeah.
So.
I also appreciate the pathways and connectivity. That's always something that we have in the comp plan. And the regional pathway is always a nice addition when we have a chance to add to kind of our overall, regional pathway plan. And the open spaces within the development are nice. I mean, sometimes, as we've seen, there are none. So I appreciate little kind of pocket parks and that they're spread throughout, so folks are hopefully more likely to use them as they're, you know, potentially closer to one instead of just having, like, one large open space that's potentially quite far from most of the subdivision, so.
And I think I also appreciate the fact that it's completely laid out instead of just phase one of five phases, so we don't see what the rest of it looks like. So.
You know, one thing that caught my eye, Mayor, was all the greenery they got at the end of each street. I kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
It gives a boulevard look a little bit to the...
Yeah.
And I did notice that the public areas are spread throughout the whole plat, and they did a very nice job at that. So,
I did see the one letter about the one letter specifically about the landscaping. So I appreciated the response on that. That, you know, they are complying with the request in the letter, which is to have the landscaping be consistent with other local subdivisions. So overall, it looked like it complied with the comp plan and city code and met a lot of our objectives in terms of having a variety of housing, open space. It's close-ish to commercial centers and stuff like that, so potentially also increasing walkability or different modes of transportation just to get over to the Ridley Center and some of the other commercial that's planned over there. So I'm prepared to make a motion if folks are done talking about it.
Yep.
Okay. let's see. I move we approve a decision and order for, let's see, 1806AN, and I move that we close the public hearing and direct staff to prepare findings of fact, conclusions of law, and an order of decision for approval by council at the next on the next council meeting consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve a decision on an order on 1806 AN and close the public hearing, direct staff to prepare findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order of decision. Is there any further discussion on that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. And then we also have 18-08-S.
Oh, I'm sorry. I completely missed that. Okay. Can I just amend my prior motion, or do I have to read all of it again? What's your recommendation, Council?
I think you could just move to approve that number.
Okay. I move we approve 18-08-S.
Second.
Motion's made to approve 18-08-S. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Item B, public hearing for resolution number R14-2019 and consideration to approve ordinance number 2019-07. Chris Ingalls.
Chris Ingalls for the record. Thank you, Mayor, Council. What's presented this evening is an ordinance that would allow for personal use of wine or beer in the city parks. Currently, the only way, if you had a family barbecue, a school reunion, or anything like that, you would have to do a catering permit, which requires a business or restaurant that has a liquor license, and they would have to cater the event for the liquor. So the Parks Department requested that we look at this, and we have mimicked this after what Boise allows. It's been reviewed by the police, it's been reviewed by Parks, Clerk's Office, as well as the city attorney. In addition to that, the public hearing itself is on the resolution because there would be a $20 fee for the permit. The purpose in having a permit and a fee associated with it is the $20 mimics the current catering permit fee that we charge, as well as if we see a trend or we see that we might have a large group that's pulling a personal permit for beer or wine, then we can let the police know or take whatever action we might need, or make sure that they're not purchasing multiple permits for the same event, because only one would be allowed. So I stand for any questions as Bobby Withrow and the chief.
So I think I heard you say the $20 was, we were just kind of going off of what Boise does. Is that, or how did we land on that figure?
On the $20?
Yeah.
We currently charge $20 for catering permits, liquor catering permits. So it's just in uniform with that.
I'm thinking about, you know, if one of the stated goals is like, hey, we're having a whatever kind of little get together and we're going to have some beer there, and our goal is to get a heads up about that in case it, you know, whatever, we want to pass it on to the police. I'm just thinking about those, and that I think folks would be less likely to comply with it, or, you know, just like roll the dice and see what happens. But I understand that, so I guess the thing that I'm concerned about is, I understand that this applies to more than just small private parties.
Right.
And so I'm thinking about whether it would make sense to have like a sliding fee structure at all based on the number of people, or if that just gets too hard to deal with. Because if it's just like a small gathering and you're, you know what I mean, you end up spending like, oh, we only spent like $40 on alcohol, we had to spend a whole nother 20 just on getting permission to drink the alcohol, and you know what I mean?
The fee really is less reflective of how big the family or the get-together is. It's more reflective of the administrative time to issue the permit, make sure that we viewed their ID, that they signed for it, and that we've notified parks or police if there needs to be. So it's, I don't think the size of the event is not going to change the administrative needs. The $20, like I said, is reflective of what we do with catering permits. There's a little bit more involved with catering permits. We do have to get the chief to come in and sign them. We have to look at restrictions to apply. I could see potentially that the permit could be more closer to 15 or maybe 10, and then if that's not covering the administrative costs, we certainly can bring that case back to council for consideration.
I mean, it feels like if there's a lot more administrative steps involved for the catering permit versus this one, that it would make sense that there would be a different cost. So I appreciate considering that.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a public hearing, and I had no one to sign up to testify. Was there anyone who didn't get a chance that wishes to? Okay, seeing none. I don't know if you want to go ahead and close the evidence.
Well, do we have more? I mean, does anybody else have questions for Chris or anybody? Or
I thought I seen a hand back there.
Yeah.
Maybe my eyes are going out.
Or for the chief or anybody? I'll close it, but I just didn't want to do it.
If I read 73-16, it says for any person. I have a concern that if a family, mother, dad, three children go down to the park and dad brings a six pack, he'd be breaking the law according to this?
He'd be breaking the law as it is now.
Has this been a problem, John, with alcohol in our parks? Can the police have a problem with disorderly people in the parks?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, John McDaniel for the record, CUNA Police Chief. Very rarely, you know, and normally, it's hard to say without, I didn't come with the actual data of how many times we've been called to our eight parks, but it is pretty rare, and most of the time a warning on the behavior. What I do like about this current ordinance is that, number one, it limits it to 7.5 gallons or less. Number two, they are required to have that permit on them, so we can read that permit, make sure it was valid. It also allows us, if they are violating any of the rules that they sign, they sign to, they're going to all the park rules, etc., and they cannot disturb anybody else's peace, that allows us to stop the party right there, confiscate it, and end it, and pull the permit. So I think it really gives us that option, that if we ask and we don't get cooperation from the party, it's right in that ordinance, we can pull that. And the last thing I really like about the ordinance is that it does allow also when the person signs for that permit, they do take responsibility for any damage and actually the other patrons that are part of their party or their get together. So
I guess let me ask you point blank. If I was there with my family, unaware of this citation, being it's a city park, and I was having a beer, and Brianna sitting over the table calls the CUNA police to notify him that I am having a beer on my table, that's how you would become aware. Would you actually go and cite the individual, or would be a warning that you needed a permit? Or
yeah.
I know I'm putting you in an awkward position on record.
I think I can speak for, we do get those calls once in a while along the Greenville and in the parks, and we let them know. It's more of an education process unless they're disturbing the peace. And our disorderly code that we passed last year kind of covers some of that as well. And so we do have some different avenues if somebody doesn't want to change that behavior. It's education.
So it's not an automatic enforcement.
Absolutely
okay.
not.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they try hard with, like, the purpose is behavior correction. Like, years ago I did a ride-along with Cody, and, you know, if it's your first offense of speeding and you're, you know, sorrowful about it and you're willing to take responsibility and they feel like the behavior is going to change, they're not going to bother writing you a ticket. But if you're a jerk about it and you're totally unrepentant and they can tell by looking at your record you've gotten a bunch of speeding citations, like, it's whatever's going to change the behavior has been my experience with the CUNA police, which I appreciate.
So crying doesn't help, huh?
Depends on if you're also sorry.
Are there real tears or not?
Okay, I'm a little concerned about the unlawful for any person, which, okay, that's fine. Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Technically, that's currently our rule. It's just a matter of if you're getting it. Apparently, the only way you can do it right now is to have the full-on catering permit.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Chris was trying to, and Bobby were trying to fix, was that right now there is no means for someone to go in there legally and have a couple of six packs of beer or whatever they want to do and have a little get together. And so this at least gives them an option so they can do it legally and
have 9.5 gallons of wine.
7.
It's a nice, that's what I meant, 7.5 on a nice little Saturday.
I would almost say 99% of the people don't even know they have to get a permit, be honest with you.
Probably right.
So.
We get a lot of requests each year. We get a lot of phone calls about it. I don't know if Bobby's staff does, but the clerk's office gets a lot of calls about, we're having a reunion, we're having a barbecue, can we take beer in the cooler, and we have to explain the rules to them. So we get quite a few calls once
it
starts going.
Okay. Bobby, the beer keg next weekend is off.
No, it's not.
Don't even bother showing up.
Don't worry.
Mr. Gigray, yes.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Bill Gigray, city attorney. Thanks, Chris. I made that violated twice this evening. I forgot who I am. One of the things you may want to think about is working with Bobby, Mr. Withrow, with the parks and Chris and anyone else involved, and John, you may want to post some signs in some of these parks to notify people that if they prefer to have beer or wine at any of their, while they're there, that they are required to get a permit, so there's some notice. And even if the police chief goes up in the situation like you're speaking of, and you know they'll say, well, I didn't know anything about it, at least the chief can point, well, there is a sign over here and we encourage people. And I just think it might be something worth considering as you do this. Regarding the amount of the fee, as you know, by statute you have the right to impose a fee for a service provided by the city as long as it's reasonably related to the cost and would otherwise be supported by the general fund, which this is. So I believe that the city clerk's answer to the question was very appropriate, that you would be fully within the law to do this. Now, you can exercise your discretion and reduce the amount if you choose.
Okay, thank you.
Chris, real quick, this is just more of a simplistic little question, but in section 2, letter G, number 7, just the wording of it, it says beer and wine may only be sold or vended in any fashion or be distributed as a basis to solicit donations.
I'm sorry, could you point me to that direction?
Yeah, it's in section 2, letter G, down in the ordinance there, where it lists off the conditions, the permit conditions. Mm-hmm. Number 7 says beer and wine may only be sold or vended in any fashion. And just the wording on that, maybe I'm a little confused by it.
Let me read it aloud to bring life to it. Mm-hmm. Beer and wine may only be sold or vended in any fashion or be distributed as a basis to solicit donations, contributions, nor under, that seemed like should say or, under any other form of payment consideration pursuant to the alcohol beverage catering permit provided by the applicant. So they're trying to say, we could try switching it around the ordering of the words, but essentially they're saying you can't accept any donations, money, anything in exchange for the alcohol unless you have a catering permit.
Correct.
Okay. That makes sense.
So we could change nor to or, and we can introduce that as no beer or wine may be sold.
Unless it's pursuant to the
in any fashion or distributed basis, solicit donation contributions or under any other form of payment consideration pursuant to alcohol beverage catering permit provided by the. So it introduces no. Okay.
Just so you don't need a law degree to read it.
City attorney or nor a law degree, right?
or nor. Okay, good catch. Anything else on that?
What if folks think about, and please break in, counsel, if I am jumping ahead, but I didn't want to close evidence presentation yet in case there was additional questions. What do folks think about reducing the fee on this on the logic that a full-on catering permit that would include the sale of alcohol is $20, and this requires less administrative effort than that?
I think it's fair to look at that, especially when Chris is the one to say it doesn't take as much effort or administrative cost.
Or is this worth the $20 in the catering with alcohol?
We haven't issued any of these permits, so it's a best guess, but our anticipation is they're going to fill out the form either in person or they'll do it electronically. And it's pretty much just a checkbox, and they have to sign. We need proof of their ID and the $20. We will make sure that they have a park reservation, which we have access to that calendar. We're not entirely sure what the level of administration. It's just our best guess at this point.
I think my preference would be to start it at 10, because I would like to see more people comply with it. I think there's value in that.
Sure.
So I think that would be my preference. And then if you can proceed with, assuming we approve it, proceed with your data gathering, and then we can reevaluate after an appropriate period of time to see if it does seem like it's taking more time than that, if we need to move back towards 12 or 15, or, if it seems like that's adequate.
I think I'm fine with that. Bobby, okay. Do you have any concerns? No. I think we're fine with that. And then if it's just not, covering the administrative costs, we'll certainly come back.
Okay. Rich, were you going to say something?
I have a problem that I'm going to be limited to only 7.5 gallons of beer.
That's right. And if you're going to carry a pony keg with you, you have to put it in the backpack on your back and walk around.
And then the other thing that I was concerned about was the, if I can find it here, number 11, in the event of violation or violations of permit, the responding law enforcement officer may revoke the permit and confiscate the remaining beer. What are your officers going to do with that? Have a party once a year with the confiscated beer? I think overall it looks good to me. I just have a little problem with an individual with his family having to take out a permit, but so be it, I guess.
Well, okay. If it helps, currently they're just not allowed to do it at all. We have no open containers allowed. So,
And I think maybe legal was correct, and we should post some signs maybe at each entrance. So it would probably be a very good idea to remind me as I walk onto the premises.
That's Bobby's department.
With my pony keg strapped on Bobby's back.
That'll be easier for you once you get your knee
That's
fixed.
Right.
I would like to buy the first permit so that I can witness all of this, just for the record.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry, I have one more question for council. Unlike the prior public hearing, I don't see a section as it's written out that specifically says close the public hearing. I see the section that says consideration to close evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation, but I didn't know if included in a potential motion to approve the ordinance, there also needed to be a motion to close the public hearing.
I think you can approve the ordinance in the public hearing because it's really your action as a
okay.
result of the public hearing.
So the public hearing just closes on its own?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bill Giegray, city attorney, excuse me.
I figure it's known who you are because I keep addressing you, but... Do I still need to officially close evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation, or does the passage of the ordinance so signify also?
Mr. Mayor, councilman, I think in this instance, since this is legislative and not quasi-judicial, it's not really as, we don't get quite as concerned about procedure here, but in my mind, I think it is nice to move to close the receipt of any evidence so everybody knows now we're just going to take action on the matter and you're not going to receive any more information and you're ready to act.
Okay. I'm going to skip that. I think we're clear anyway. All right, I move we approve Ordinance 2019-07 with the change discussed to item G7.
Second.
Madam President, mm-hmm. did you make a motion as to the fee to be charged?
It's coming.
Okay.
Would you like to waive the three readings?
Is that for the ordinance or just the resolution?
The city our attorney is saying we have to approve the ordinance first, then the resolution.
Got it. I think I was thrown because it's, anyway. Apologies. Okay, I move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2019-07.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance 2019-07. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2019-07 with the change discussed to item G7.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the Ordinance 2019-07 with the change to, what was it, G7?
Correct.
Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardozo?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Buben Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
How do we feel about summary publication? Or do we feel like the full content of it is useful?
I think a summary publication would work as long as we make it clear in the summary what the intent of the ordinance is, just so people can read it. Okay.
Does anybody here have a preference?
I think it's okay to approve.
Summary? All right. I move we approve summary publication of Ordinance 2019-07.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the summary publication of Ordinance 2019-07. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Consideration to approve resolution number R14-2019. Resolution in the City of Puna, Idaho, establishing fees for beer, wine permit, allowing for individual use at city parks, and providing an effective date.
I move we approve resolution R14-2019 with the note that the fee would be changed from $20 to $10.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution number R14-2019 with the notation that fees will be reduced from $20 to $10. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. All right. Fair Housing Month 2019 proclamation. Whereas April 2019 marks the 51st anniversary of the passage of Title VIII of the Civil Rights Act of 1968, commonly known as the Federal Fair Housing Act, and whereas the Idaho Human Rights Commission Act has prohibited discrimination in housing since 1969, equal opportunity for all regardless of race, color, religion, sex, disability, familial status, or national origin is a fundamental goal of our nation, state, and city, and whereas equal access to housing is an important component of this goal, as fundamental as the right to equal education and employment, and whereas housing is a critical component of family and community health and stability, and whereas housing choice impacts our children's access to education, our ability to seek and retain employment options, the cultural benefits we enjoy, the extent of our exposure to crime and drugs, and the quality of health care we receive in emergencies, and whereas the laws of this nation and our state seek to ensure such equality of choice for all transactions involving housing, and whereas ongoing education, outreach, and monitoring are key to raising awareness of fair housing principles, practices, rights, and responsibilities, and whereas only through continued cooperation, commitment, and support of all Idahoans can barriers to fair housing be removed. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Joel Steer, Mayor of the City of Cuna, Idaho, hereby proclaim April 2019 to be Fair Housing Month in the City of Cuna, A County, State of Idaho. And if we have that for the record, that first sentence there, we need to change that to 51st. Thank you. All right. Consideration to approve resolution number R21-2019, Nancy Stauffer, Human Resources Director. Yeah, did you want to go ahead and?
Mayor, Council, for the record, Nancy Stauffer, Human Resources. I am proposing that we adopt an amendment to the Personnel Policy Manual, Section 12.3.5, regarding approval of the current vacation cap and how it is approved and extension, and providing an effective date. Questions.
And so the reasoning for this is we have a couple of employees that sometimes, no matter how hard they try, they can't get all of their vacation time in the allotted amount of time, and we really, they're great employees. We would certainly hate to lose them because we take away their benefits, and this is not something that happens a lot, but we would just like the ability to, under our discretion, and seeing that they have done the best they can to try to use up vacation time, once in a while make an allowable an exception, and it certainly is not intended to ever extend the amount of debt the city would have to that employee, but it happens rarely.
It is rare. We have been sending out regular emails to employees for the last 4 or 5 months, letting them know this is where you're at, and they're trying. And, you know, some people have worked here a really long time, and they're very valuable, and their time is very useful to the city, and it's really hard. And instead of saying wipe it out, I would like to request that we allow a carryover.
Okay. So originally, when we went to the leave cap system, it was based, at least partially, if not fully, on federal sector. That's where my reference point comes from. And even in the federal sector, we do have, you know, it's called use or lose, and there are very limited circumstances where you can get approval to extend it if there's some, like, very compelling reason beyond the employee's control for why they weren't able to use it. So I'm open to it. The language in here satisfies me in terms of unavoidable, extremely limited circumstances that it would hopefully be very infrequent. So I think I'm okay with it. What do other people think?
Yeah, I'm good with it. Yeah, Mr.
Yes.
Mayor, members of the council, just as an addition to this, I think this is a more practical solution for dealing with this issue, because under the open meeting law, if you look at each one of these and have to approve each one of them, we're dealing with public records that are not disclosable. We have to go into executive session, then you still have to have an action item coming out or you can't approve something. So it gets very problematic, and you can see that the clerk, Chris, has put at the end of the agenda, just in case you didn't approve this resolution, so that you could take some action this evening. So it does, I think this streamlines this process, and she can certainly report to you where you are in this process, and if you decide you need to reel it in, you always have that authority.
Thank you.
Good. Anything
further?
Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
I move we approve resolution R21-2019.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution R21-2019. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Second reading of ordinance number 2019-05. An ordinance of the City Council of Puna, Idaho, amending Title I, Chapter 6, Section 8, entitled Public Hearing Rules of Procedure of the Puna City Code, providing for clarification on public hearing rules of procedure, establishing testimony time limits, regulating the presentation of documents and other forms of physical evidence, amending the recognized public hearing motions, clarifying conflict of interest procedures, and providing for an effective date and publication. So this is the second reading. If we want to, we can leave it on for next meeting to do the third reading, or
let it ride.
Okay.
I think that was Rich's suggestion last time, because it deals with public testimony, public rights to input, whatever.
Sure.
I don't think we're making any major changes, but I don't see any harm in it.
Plus, it's not 3 pages I have to read every time. So
yeah.
Okay. All right. So, Mayor and Council announcements. Bob, did you have something you were going to bring up? It seemed like there was something.
Mayor and Council, I just wanted to share a little piece of good news with you guys. Our energy department and our sewer department, we have our West Well project going on at the lagoons. During the rebuild of that, we ran into quite a few problems and didn't have much good news during the process. But due to their hard work and due diligence in looking at equipment and communicating with Idaho Power, we have a pump that's going in that's $11,900 and some change. and they were able to get the rebate of $13,000 on that.
Nice.
So I'm sure it'll pay the exact amount, but just one of those things that just good hard work led to them stumbling across a rebate that worked with a pump that would work also. And so I just wanted to share that with you. And that was would have been Carly and Travis that put that program together, and pretty cool. Neat deal.
Yeah, so, very good. Thank you.
Yep.
I'm also proud of the fact that we continue to work under our energy saving commitment. I think we've come quite a long ways. We've got a long ways to go yet, but staff's been working very hard on that and doing a good job with it. So,
good deal.
Appreciate that. Did anybody else have anything they wanted to talk about announcement-wise?
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
Okay. All right.
So do we have exec, or is that not necessary after the resolution? No exec? Okay. I shall not make that motion then.
All right. Well, that's all we have. So meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much.